Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today, we're going to be talking many, many things today. The employment numbers came out today, and a little bit of a shock to the markets. Today is January 10th, 2014. It's Friday, and once again, welcome to the program. And I'm not quite sure where Alfred is at.
I'm here.
Oh, you are there. Yes, I can.
See, I wasn't sure if you'd hooked up. I started talking after the bumper music. I wasn't sure if you were connected. But now we're both connected, so we are both happy campers, and
You would think after so many years this would go a little bit more smooth in the beginning, but anyway, gold had a good day. It was a little smoother for gold today, up 18.20 today at 1246.90. Silver was up 58 cents today at 20.23. Platinum was up $19 at 1440, and palladium was up 6 at $747. The USDX today was trading lower, 0.29 at 80.65, and crude oil bumped up a buck today at 92.66. And the markets did do a turnaround. They were lower earlier in the day. And, of course, if you give them enough time, they will do what they need to do. The Dow was down 7 points today at 16,437. You had the NASDAQ up 18 at 4,174. And the S&P was also up 4 at 1842. And the 10-year yield today was down 2.86, down 0.11. I should say the 2.86 is the percentage of the 10-year yield. On Friday, January 10th, 2014. Oh, Al.
Yes, Melody.
All right. Glad that you're here. A lot of things to talk about today.
I'm glad that I'm here, too.
The unemployment benefit applications today fell to 330,000. We're going to be talking about that. And we're also going to be talking about the poor job recovery.
Well, which one do we talk about first, Melody?
You take your pick.
Well, let's talk about U.S. unemployment benefit applications fall to 330,000, at least according to one report. I didn't write down which newspaper made this report. It's probably the New York Times, but I don't recall clearly. The number of Americans seeking unemployment benefits fell 15,000 last week to a seasonally adjusted 330,000, signaling fewer layoffs and steady job growth. All right. Now, what they're talking about, jobs, they claim 15,000. I've seen another report that says, no, it's this one. Let me continue and try not to be as confused as I am. The Labor Department said Thursday that the less volatile four-week average dropped 9,750 to 349,000. So, in fact, they dropped 15,000 last week, but the four-week average dropped 9,000 or nearly 10,000 last week. So it all becomes to some degree confusing, at least for simple minds like my own. And it continues, it says, a labor spokesman said there was no indication that snow and freezing weather around much of the country caused the drop in applications. Okay. Well, there's no indication. That's like saying there's no evidence that someone shot someone. The fact we don't see the evidence doesn't mean that something didn't happen. We might not be able to prove it. There is some suggestion. And the implication would be this. If snow and freezing weather prevented people from failing to go downtown, to go wherever they've got to go to file these applications, that would indicate that there wasn't actually as much of a reduction in applications for unemployment as the numbers indicate. Say, did you not apply for unemployment because you didn't lose your job last week, or did you not apply because the weather was so bad you couldn't get out of the house to go make the application? The number of applications could fluctuate in coming weeks because of harsh winter weather that caused some of the offices that closed some offices last week. All right. So maybe even got out of the house to go make the application, but the offices were closed. It goes on and explains that applications for unemployment are a proxy for layoffs. We understand that when people come in and make the applications, it means they've recently been laid off from their regular jobs. They appear to have stabilized near pre-recession levels after a period of volatility around the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays. This suggests recent job gains will continue. We're not having job gains. We still have 330,000 people who are filing new applications for unemployment. That's not technically a gain. It might not be as much of a loss as we suffered the previous week, but it's not a gain per se. We're still having 330,000 people a month that are filing for unemployment. They continue. Jennifer Lee, senior economist at BMO Capital Markets, said the underlying trend is encouraging and supports the view that job creation is picking up momentum. All right. The underlying trend language that Ms. The senior economist, BMO Capital Markets, referred to, the underlying trend, is not the actual numbers. All they're saying is the underlying trend is there are 10,000 people, less people who filed for unemployment in the last month than there had been in the previous month. That's an underlying trend if there had been one person less. Not 10,000 people less. If there had been one person less, we would still have an underlying trend that unemployment applications for unemployment insurance are falling. The underlying trend does not indicate the magnitude of whatever, you know, we're talking about. And in this particular instance, if we've got 330,000 applications in the month of December for unemployment, and that's 10,000 less than we had in November, then at that rate of decline, if we lose 10,000, it's going to take close to 3 years to get to a point where no one is filing for unemployment in a particular month. Now, we'll never see that. There's always people that are being laid off or businesses are closing. But still, doesn't mean that happy days are here again. Nevertheless, if you follow the article, and I'm probably confused quite a lot, but if you follow it, they're just doing happy talk, keep talking happy talk. You know, it's like the old song, talk about things you'd like to do. But the truth of the matter is something else. Here we've got another article from the Weekly Standard from Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, who's a Republican. And he responded to the latest jobs report. And he says, for every one job added, nearly five people left the workforce. Today's job report underscores a deeper problem facing the economy, a large and growing block of people who are chronically jobless and completely outside the workforce. In December, the economy added only 74,000 jobs, not nearly enough to keep up with population growth, and 347,000 left the workforce. This isn't 347,000 who simply filed for unemployment. They've left the workforce. They're out of here. That means, here the Senator Sessions continues, he says, that means for every one job added, nearly five people left the workforce entirely. There are now nearly 92 million Americans outside the workforce, resulting in the lowest participation rate in 36 years. Now, I don't know where he comes up with 92 million. I don't believe he's including children, you know, who of course don't have jobs, and senior citizens who are retired. I think he's just talking about the population age, say, 16 through 65. 15 years of American life, essentially. Out of that population, what would that population be? Maybe 200 million, 220 million out of the entire population? How many people actually could be in the workforce right now? I'm guessing 200 million. Guessing. Don't know. He's saying that 92 million of those 200 million aren't in the workforce anymore. Now, that's interesting. It means half the people in this country who in theory could have jobs don't. Now, a lot of them don't want jobs. They're not looking for jobs. A lot of them are housewives, stay at home, and they're not looking for a job at McDonald's or the local real estate agency or wherever. But still, 92 million Americans who could be in the workforce are apparently out, according to Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican from Alabama. The president's immigration plan will only make things dramatically worse, and no amount of promise zones will be sufficient remedy for the millions of displaced workers. What he's saying is President Obama wants to give citizenship to the illegal aliens, and if he succeeds, all it will mean is another wave of illegal aliens will come into this country. And what will they be taking? They will not be taking the jobs no one wants. They'll be taking the wages no one wants. That's what they'll be taking. And in doing so, they will reduce all of our standard of living will fall further. More people who were born in this country will find it difficult or impossible to find jobs, and the number of Americans outside the workforce will only grow. The number of illegal aliens in the workforce will increase. The number of people born here in the workforce will decline. We must help move people off welfare, off unemployment, and into good-paying jobs that can support a family. This is from Senator Sessions again, which I regard as a bunch of crapola. Of course we need to help people get off welfare, off unemployment, and into good-paying jobs, but how are we going to create good-paying jobs in this country if we don't raise tariffs to bring former U.S. industries and the jobs they provided back into the United States of America? Here's a Republican stand up, saying, oh, we've got to get good jobs for these people. Yeah, well, tell me how you're going to do that without raising tariffs and forcing industries that used to be located in this country to return to this country. You can spin. You know, the government is of the mindset that they can spin currency out of thin air. They can spin these Federal Reserve notes, and they can maintain the illusion. They can pretend these are money and get away with it for a while. And they seem to think that they can spin everything out of thin air, and they can't. They can spin paper debt instruments out of thin air. Yeah, you can do that. But how do you spin jobs out of thin air? Anybody know? We're just going to give people a high-paying job. See? Well, yeah, where? Where? Doing what? We've moved a substantial part of our industries overseas. And how are we going to have good-paying jobs, which is what Senator advocates, as long as we have low tariffs and Americans are forced to compete head-on with Chinese and Mexican labor? Global free trade and low tariffs are going to cause the standard of living for the average American to drop significantly. Not a little bit, a lot. And here's Senator Sessions, Republican. He's got more to say about this. He says, more tax, spend, and borrow, and regulate will only produce more joblessness, dependency, and debt. He's exactly right. Instead, we need more American energy, streamlined taxes and regulations, a leaner and less wasteful government, better trade and immigration enforcement, and a reformed welfare system that helps struggling Americans realize the dream of financial independence. All right, Senator, I won't argue with anything he said there, except that what he said is incomplete. Right? He's willing as a Republican to criticize big government. I agree with him. He's willing as a Republican to argue that we need less wasteful government. I agree with him. He's willing as a Republican to advocate reduced welfare. Right? But I didn't read anything in his statement to indicate that we should also cut subsidies for wealthy contributors to the Republican Party. I didn't read anything in his statement to suggest that we need to raise tariff barriers and thereby harm the multinational corporations that are wealthy contributors to the Republican Party. Sessions sees the fundamental problem, not enough productivity in this country. But everyone who looks can see the problem. The question is, who can look at the problem and offer a solution that guts his own constituency as well as those of the opposing party? We aren't going to solve this problem. This economic problem won't be solved until the Democrats are as willing to gut programs that support blacks and welfare recipients as they are to gut programs that support multinational corporations and the super rich. So long as the two parties are representing their principal contributors, their principal supporters, rather than the best interests of the United States of America, we are in deep trouble, and we are going to stay in deep trouble. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Ask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody, do folks need a special today?
Yes, we do have a special, and I also have an announcement. First, the announcement, Raleigh James. Her program is aired 11 p.m. Eastern Time on shortwave radio and also in Dallas, Texas. And she is relocating, and they are rebuilding her studio. So while her studio is down, we will be replaying this broadcast at 11 p.m. So for those of you who tune in this evening and you hear this program, you will be hearing Financial Survival Monday through Friday until Raleigh James has her studio rebuilt and she'll be able to begin airing. If you have any questions, you can call us at 1-800-375-4188. The special today, $20 gold pieces, Mint State 64 St. Gaudens. I did a comparison from a circulated $20 gold piece to a Mint State 64, and you're looking at a little over $100 spread from a circulated to a Saint in Mint State 64 condition. It is a wonderful deal, a great time for those of you who would like to add Mint State 64 Saint Gaudens to your portfolio, $1,630. Call us at 800-375-4188. If you'd like to order by email, you can send us an email, questions@dgscoins.com. And you can also use that same email if you have questions for the program, questions@dgscoins.com. And, of course, you can sign up to our weekly newsletter, American Survival, by going to the website, dgscoins.com, and that comes out every Monday. And we got Alfred writes his articles. We have an update on the markets. Lori Roth, she supports an article. We combined with Wendy Wilson for the health section of the newsletter. So make sure you sign up. And we have a caller, Al.
Okay. I can't, because you and I are on two separate lines going to American Voice Radio today. I can't tell who the caller is.
Oh, we have David from Indianapolis.
Okay. Hello, David.
Hello, Alfred. Melanie. Hey, I was wondering if you're thinking how far off I am here. I'm kind of thinking anymore that we're actually seeing the rise of a nihilistic type government in this country. You can come in and take the wage that Americans don't want to work for. Then you can subsidize their health care, and you can subsidize them with food stamps and all the other. You can subsidize their children with education and just accrued up the American debt, which is actually backed by real property in this country when it finally comes down to it. Is this a corporate fascism? They're just insuring lower wages every way you turn anymore.
I agree.
There's any way we can stay competitive with the Chinese?
If we're going to compete in the global markets, yeah. This is the whole idea. If we're going to have global free trade, we have to compete with the Chinese. On the other hand, we had the best market in the world. It was called the United States of America, and it was protected by tariffs. Insofar as those tariffs have been knocked down for the glory of global free trade, it necessarily means that the American standard of living is going to decline. And I mean dramatically. In the end, we are going to have a standard of living that is at least similar to that of Mexico and or India and or China. Our incomes are going to have to go to that level because our labor will inevitably have to compete with the Chinese, Indian, Mexican countries. Now, the solution to the problem is you simply restore sovereignty and nationality and restore your tariffs. And when you do, the jobs that went overseas, they come back into this country. The industries that moved overseas to take advantage of cheap labor, they're going to be forced, if they want to sell in this country, they're going to have to relocate in this country. And it means we will once again have to build our own cars, our own computers, our own washing machines. And if it will reduce the competition. And we have, and if we kept those tariffs up, we would still have essentially a monopoly on the best market in the world, and that's the United States of America. But insofar as our government and its brilliance has decided we'll go for global free trade, they're going to push everyone who's listening to this program. Your standard of living is going to decline until standards of living around the world more or less equalize. And I guarantee when they're more or less equalized, they will not be higher than what we enjoy today. They will be, we're going to average out the standard of living for India and China and Mexico and South America and Africa, and we average it all out, and we're all going to be happy campers. Or maybe happy tent occupiers, because that might be all we can afford to live in. What do you think, David?
Well, I'm thinking I'm sure glad my mother and father never lived long enough to see this day when we got such a ruinous Democratic and Republican Party.
That's exactly right.
No one's ringing the alarm.
One of the most amazing things to me was the election of Barack Obama. There was evidence out before he was even nominated for the Democratic primary back in 2008. The evidence was available that he was not born in this country and he wasn't eligible to be president. Hillary Clinton and nor anyone else in the Democratic Party brought this up. All right? The evidence was available. But Hillary didn't, and she probably wanted to be president more than I want to continue breathing for the next half a dozen hours. Right? She wanted it more than anybody, but she didn't bring this up. People working on her behalf didn't bring up the question of Obama's eligibility. And what happened then? Obama gets nominated. It means the fix was in the Democratic Party, and even Hillary Clinton bent over to accept that fix. And then he's nominated. Okay, here comes John McCain. He's running for president from the Republican Party. Did he say anything about Obama's eligibility? Did anyone in the Republican Party say anything? The evidence was available at the time. It might not have risen to the level of proof, absolute proof, in 2008. It has since then, in my opinion. But it might not have been absolute proof, but it's the kind of thing that you could expect from Republican supporters. All right, they put up their own little commercials on TV or whatever. The Republican Party says, oh, we didn't do that. That was one of these groups over here. Somebody should have done it. No one did. It indicates to me that there is a power at work that is superior to both the Republican Party and both the Democrat Party, and both of these parties are taking their orders from some superior power. That's what it tells me, and that's consistent with what we see with both parties allowing our jobs to go overseas, allowing illegal aliens to migrate into this country. The fundamental point here is the nation is going to be destroyed with the full complicity of the people in the Congress, in the Senate, in the White House, in the federal courts. Nobody's here. Who do you know, David, who's defending this country? Who in public office right now is doing a significant job of defending this country? And you might be able to come up with a couple of names, but you won't come up with many. Do you have any names, David?
I can't think of a single one.
Neither can I. And that's the astonishing thing. That is the astonishing. It's one thing to have idiots, all right, in Congress, the Senate, the White House. Okay, we can work with idiots. We can get around that. But we're not dealing with idiots. We are dealing with a group of people who are, they've become homogenized in their support of global free trade and a new world order and the destruction of national sovereignty. They've become captured. They're selling this nation, and it's treason. They're not working for our best interests. They're working against them. And they're hoping to God that none of us catch on and realize what's going on, or if anyone catches on, it's a handful of people. But what you're talking about indicates that you're one of the people who understand this. What do you think we should go ahead.
I'll give you a litmus test here. I heard this from Rabbi Zacharias. He once said, every worldview deals with a problem. Now, depending on your morality and your ethical belief, if you take that as gold, every worldview deals with a problem. And these politicians, how they view the world, it's easy to see if they're in an ethical, moral stance or an immoral stance.
Yeah.
You know, that statement from his is phenomenal.
Every I agree.
Worldview deals with a problem.
I agree with that, and the worldview of China would be different from the worldview of the United States of America. China has its own problems, it has its own interests, and that shapes its worldview. They tend to see things in terms of whatever their biggest problem is. We tend to see things in terms of whatever our biggest problems are. But our biggest problem should be taking care of the American people, and it's not. We have people who are not, we have people in positions of power whose worldview is not, they don't see the problem as being one of protecting the American people. They see the problem as establishing a new world order, global free trade, and hell with the American people. And that's, for me, the problem. I have no problem with China working against our interests. That doesn't disturb me. You know, it can annoy me, but it doesn't disturb me. That's part of life. But what bothers me is having congressmen and senators who should be working for our best interests, who are instead betraying those best interests because the money is right. Somebody's paying them. Somebody's controlling them, and they are not doing what's right for you, me, and Joe Sixpack. That bothers me. That betrayal. I don't care about the trouble. I can deal with trouble, but I can't deal with betrayal. I can't deal with treason, and that's where we seem to be. What do you think, David?
Well, that's true, but, you know, from a moral standpoint, the Chinese may or may not be different than, from in a Christian morality, but if they are different, then it tells you that these are people that you have to put up safeguards against.
Well, I agree with that.
You know, well, that's
tariff barriers would be one. I mean, from my mind, to my mind, put up your tariff barriers, protect yourself from cheap foreign labor. That guarantees, so long as we have a viable economy, there's no reason why we can't make our own automobiles, TV sets, and washing machines. No reason for it. There's no reason why we can't have our manufacturing done in China. And there's good reason why we should do our own manufacturing. We need to build what we want to consume. Otherwise, what have we got? You know, if you're not producing something, if you're just living on welfare subsidies or government employment or something, we got nothing. And it will only end badly. Or at least we're going to go through a very difficult episode, a period that lasts for several years, maybe a decade, when we are going to pay through the nose for all the irresponsible behavior that we've allowed and tolerated that's been perpetrated by our own government. Somebody's going to pay the price for that. And it's going to be the American people one way or another. Got anything else for us, David?
No, sir. Much obliged.
Well, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. What do you think, Melody?
Well, very good comments. And you're absolutely right. It's the American people, but I still question the American people. Have they come to accept the laws, the outcomes of the New World Order? Have they embraced the New World Order? Have they embraced globalism? Have they embraced it to the point where there will be no turning back? There will be
no tariffs.
You can
turn back anytime you want to turn back, but you can't turn back painlessly. All right, it's like going downhill in an automobile in the mountains. We can stop if we want to, but it's going to be a difficult situation. We're going to lose.
That's it, Al. People don't want to turn back.
Well, I think they would if they understood it. I think most people don't realize the kind of peril we're in. They take it for granted that they're riding a bus and it's going downhill, and well, that's just the way things are. They don't understand.
But
we could slam on the brakes. It's going to be a difficult situation, but we can slam on the brakes. And if we don't, we got a long ways to go down that mountain road, and we're probably going to go over the cliff. It's going to be easier to stop the vehicle now than it will be a year from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now. But people don't understand this yet, in my opinion.
And I was talking to you about a commercial I saw while I was watching the news programs this morning. Three people out of work complaining because their unemployment benefits expired in December. Blaming the Republicans. Please make the Republicans, you know, restart our benefits. The fight is there. And people, that they looked well-adjusted people. You know, you had one who was married, and she was complaining that if she wasn't married, she'd be on the street. You had one where he was using up his retirement benefits, and I had told you about this prior to the program. It's like, what happened to life? What happened to when we have these problems, we deal with it, and we do what we have to do to get through it. And if you know, and we all do the best we can do. People turn to programs now. They
are no longer independent. What you're touching on is the idea that people, we had problems and we dealt with our own problems. Now we have problems and we presume that somebody else is responsible for dealing with their own problems. And it's a dangerous and debilitating mindset. As long as you're trusting somebody else to solve your problems, you are vulnerable, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a commercial break for a couple more announcements. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Start out with Richard Russell. We've got a quote here from Richard Russell, who is the principal behind a newsletter, Dow Theory Letters. And he writes in part, "The U.S. could unilaterally reset the price of gold to a much higher number and overnight reliquify the system and minimize the pressure of our enormous debt. The price of gold has been reset twice before in the U.S., so why not now? Yet nobody in D.C. has even broached this idea." Why? He's talking about the price of gold has been reset twice before. It was $20 an ounce or thereabouts. They boosted it up to $35 thereabouts. That was the one instance that comes to mind. I'm not quite sure what he means by the second one, but the point he's making, this, the idea of changing the price of gold and thereby changing the value of the dollar is not foreign to government thinking. They've done it before. He's arguing they could do it again, and he is surprised. He can see the utility of changing the price of gold dramatically upward because he believes people, in some people, crackpots maybe, but nevertheless, there should be a senator, a congressman, somebody in government should be saying, why don't we revalue the price of gold? And nobody's doing it. And he wants to know why. Because he's operating from the assumption, or most people are operating from the assumption, that there are, that our government, the United States Treasury, holds about 8,200 tons of gold in the United States Treasury. The Federal Reserve has claimed that's the number of, that's the amount of gold that they have held, and it's been steady and stable for, I don't know, a couple of decades. The last time the United States Treasury was fully audited was 1953. It's been 60 years since anyone sat down and counted and weighed and tested whatever bars are in the United States Treasury to verify that, gee, we do have 8,200 tons. At least it's been 60 years since we've had a public accounting of how much gold is there. And if we had all of that gold then, and they revalued the price of gold from $1,200 an ounce, and they kicked it up and say, no, from here on out, gold's going to be worth $20,000 an ounce. Okay? Well, it would mean that the government's 8,200 tons of gold would suddenly skyrocket in value, and the government would be relatively rich again. They'd have 20 times as much currency in gold as they do now if they kick the price up, if they kick the price from gold from 1,200 to 20,000, you know, a factor of 20, broadly speaking. Now, Russell continues. He says, so it's in the government's interest to do this. So he says, why hasn't the government done this? And he says, then the full horror of the situation struck me. The reason raising the price of gold isn't discussed is that we probably haven't got the gold. Like Britain, we may have sold much of our gold and loaned it out to the bullion banks. Now, his point and what he's saying is that the 8,200 tons of gold that are supposed to be in the U.S. Treasury might not be there. He's raising the possibility that, who knows, maybe there's only 4,000 tons or 3,000 tons or even 1,000 tons of gold in the U.S. Treasury. And it is because the government doesn't have any gold that it has no interest in raising the price of gold. It's no longer in their interest. He continues. He said there have been rumors of the United States having lost much of its gold. Then why the hell doesn't the Treasury have an audit on our gold holdings and end the rumors? What is the Treasury hiding? We need an audit to prove the U.S. has the gold. It may explain how it is that the price of gold has fallen for most of the last 2 years, even though the demand for gold has increased dramatically around the world. Conventional economics teaches us that when the demand goes up and the supply remains stable, the price has to go up. But the demand has gone up and the price has gone down. And in conventional economics, that means that the supply of gold has to have increased even more than the demand. Where did that supply come from? And I don't mean the supply of gold in the world. I mean the supply that's available to the markets. Where did that extra gold come from? And more than a few people suspect that it came from the United States Treasury. More than a few people suspect that the U.S. Treasury has been secretly selling off the national treasury of gold, in allowing it to move to China, perhaps, or Japan or India, and that the day is coming when all of a sudden we're going to open the cupboard and look in Fort Knox and look inside the vault at the Federal Reserve and say, oh my gosh, there's no gold. Where did the gold go? And who will be able to explain that to the American people? Who in government will stand up and say, we thought it was a good idea to sell off all the gold in order to support the fiat dollar. It was necessary. It was an emergency. We had to do the dumbest thing we could possibly do in the world in order to support our beloved fiat dollar, which is intrinsically worthless. Who's going to be able to explain this if the gold is gone? And what is going to happen to the price of physical gold if and when we discover that, oh my gosh, the gold vaults are empty? Gold's gone. It's in Peking or Shanghai or Hong Kong. What's going to happen to the price of gold then? Do you think it'll jump from $1,250 an ounce to $1,260? Or do you think it'll jump from $1,250 an ounce to $10,000 or maybe $20,000? This is a big question, and no one knows for an absolute fact what's happened. But there does appear, it appears possible. It's consistent with there's always market manipulation. The whole 8,200 tons of gold may still be in the U.S. Treasury, and I hope it is. And it may be that the price of gold is simply down because it's been manipulated by means of using paper gold certificates and to manipulate the market and suppress the price. There may be just ordinary means of manipulation that's holding the price of gold down. But it's also possible that gold that is presumed to be in the U.S. Treasury, gold that is presumed to be outside of the free market, has actually been added to the free market and sold secretly. And in the process, they sold so much U.S. gold that the price of gold has fallen. The supply exceeded, even though the demand grew dramatically, the supply exceeded that demand and therefore the price fell. Has it happened? I don't know. If I had to guess, I'd say the price of gold is down because of market manipulation, point one, but also perhaps because some significant portion of the U.S. gold treasury has been secretly sold to foreign investors, buyers, and so on in order to shore up the U.S. dollar. If it has been secretly liquidated without knowledge of the public, there should be trials for treason, and people in positions of power should be tried. If they're found guilty, they should be hanged. This is no small thing. This is as bad or worse. No, it's not worse, but it's as bad as moving our jobs overseas. If it turns out they've also moved our gold overseas, it will be undeniable that your government is working for the purpose of destroying this country. They're not just trying to hold it together. They're not fighting difficult problems. What they're doing is working to destroy the country. Somebody, if that's the truth of the matter, someone needs to pay. And not just someone, some group, some class. A bunch of people need to be held accountable, and not with just a wrist slap. They need to pay a penalty on this. What do you think, Melody?
Well, you know, the numbers report today, I mean, tremendous. With gold being up $18, you should have had the stock market down 300 points, 400 points. And what did they basically, you know, changed very slightly. So I think next week is going to be interesting. And to me, it saw that money went into the stock market to keep it from falling today. They ignored gold, and gold went up. And so we'll have to see how this plays out next week. Next week, the Davos meetings begin. Usually whenever that happens, you'll usually see some sort of weakness in gold and the stock market higher. I don't think we're going to get that this year. I think they are running out of time. The big discussions in Davos was supposed to be about unemployment. And, you know, Al, where do you think technology, how many jobs do you think technology alone has eliminated? We talk about jobs going overseas, and you know, I agree. But technology, I mean, those jobs are never, ever. I mean, you know, as an example, you used to have a businessman who had a secretary who had maybe one or two secretaries and a receptionist. Now he works out of his house and uses a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So.
I agree. It's part of the problem. The world is becoming increasingly competitive in the light. And, you know, if you can find a job, if you can find a source of jobs, you need to treat that source with a great deal of respect. You may not like the wages they're paying, and I don't mean to imply that these sources should be allowed to exploit people, but you got to be careful not to lose the sources of jobs, because they are under increasing pressure, in part because the population of the world has exploded over the last in my lifetime. You know, there are so many more people, there's so much more competition for jobs that people will work for less. And it's at the same time when technology is replacing a lot of jobs. As we become more efficient, jobs become, the growth of jobs is diminished. So you got to start thinking in your mindset. Look, if you can find a source for employment, you've got to consider that. That's something you can't take lightly. And I know that a bunch of these sources are nothing but ruthless, exploitive, self-serving entities. And it's unfortunate, and I don't know how to deal with this, but I'm just saying, we're losing jobs to foreigners, we're losing jobs to technology. It's a fact that we are losing jobs, we're going to continue to lose jobs, and that inevitably means there's got to be some sort of serious social and political restructuring, or there's going to be social and political violence. What are we going to do with the people who don't have jobs? Let them kill each other? Is that what we should do? Let them starve to death? Is that what we should do? Let them predate on those who do have jobs as criminals, thumping people on the head and robbing them. What are we going to do if people don't have jobs? I mean, government has to treat these jobs with as much respect as they treat bars of gold. They've got to say, look, we've got to protect this. We've got to put these jobs in a vault. Tariff barriers are one way of putting your job in a vault, all right, where it's only available, you know, to a select few. That would be the people of the United States of America. And we had that. We had that. We've given up our jobs so the rest of the world, or some of the rest of the world, can have them. And on one level, the rest of the world, they might have said thanks a lot. They never did. They might have said, gee, thanks for your sacrifice. On another level, our own congressmen and senators could say, look, we are going to sacrifice the American dream. We're going to pass laws that are going to see that your standard of living is diminished, and your children's standard of living and your grandchildren's standard of living will be further diminished until the world has a homogenized standard of living for all but the elite. They might have told us if they were going to do this. They've done this essentially in secret without telling people, here's what we're doing and here's why we're doing it. They fed us a bunch of nonsense, and we've been dumb enough, apathetic enough, ignorant enough to accept these idiotic excuses. We've allowed people who supposedly represent you and me to act in the best interests of entities that don't even live in this country. We're going to pay a big price for that before this is done. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening today. We will be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills.